Brothers and sisters, it's Robbie Fisher, Fools International Training Trustee, Education Chair. It is Blog Talk Radio, and it is Monday, May 11th. I'm happy to be here tonight with you all, and if you're logging in or downloading later, whatever time of day that you're getting this, my guest today is Richie Stack, the former president of Fools International, and I'm excited to share my interview with him. But before that, I want to thank Bobby Halton, Fire Engineering, for giving us the opportunity to connect with you all and have the opportunity to have a podcast on fire engineering. We were saddened by not being able to meet with everybody and during FDIC. And, you know, if hopefully you all or some of you got connected in when we did the Zoom meeting, the Fool's Bash. That was a good time, but we are looking forward to getting back to some normalcy here with COVID leaving and getting back to what we really like doing, and that's being with our brothers and sisters. So before I get on to the interview with Richie, I just want to remind everybody that we still have convention planned for October 6th through the 10th. It's going to be in Orlando. If you don't know how to get to where you're going to find all of this, you can go to foolsinternational.com. Look on the left-hand side, just shy of halfway down, you'll see Convention 2020. And if you're afraid of websites and you spend all your time on social media with like Facebook, you can find all this information on Facebook as well. So we are still planning to move forward with convention, and we're looking forward to being able to meet with all of you that come out to convention. So it's going to be an exciting time. They got some really good stuff planned. And probably in the next podcast we do, we'll have some of the guys on from convention planning so they can tell you exactly what's going on. My interview with Richie Stack. I've been waiting to do this interview with him. I told him that it was kind of more like his exit interview. Richie and I, we got a chance to talk about, you know, how he got into the fire service, what's he doing in the fire service, working with Chicago Fire, how he got there, talking a little bit about what he's doing at Chicago Fire, and how he got into the Fools and what he loved so much about the Fools and his time as president with the International. So it was a great interview. Enjoyed it. It was just shy of an hour talk that I had with him. And I look forward to sharing that interview and that talk with you right here and now. Richie, I appreciate you coming on today. I've been looking forward to this this interview with you. We had spent a number of years on the Fools International E-Board together, and we'll consider this kind of like your exit interview. I was planning, and I figure I was going to let it be a little bit further along, you know, so you can get all nasty fat and hairy and ugly and everything else. The timing just worked out right that we could sit down and chat and go over a few things and just kind of just learn a little bit more about you and how this all came about. So first of all, where are you at today?
Today I'm home with the family in the kitchen, talking with you and kind of sheltering in place per the COVID-19 requirements for our governor here in Illinois. But it's a good thing. I go, my wife started doing a puzzle and she was shocked that I didn't want to help her. And I said, I hate puzzles. So not for me. I'm more of a tinkerer, can take stuff apart and put together. And as I'm watching her do this puzzle, like no interest, but I did compromise. I said, if she got an American flag one or a Chicago flag, I would do it with her.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we'll see.
And you said it's Illinois, right? Illinois.
No, you dropped the S. It's just a silent S that's there. Right.
No, that's the thing that we've always, every time right. I would say, you're like, what is wrong with you? There is no S there. I'm like, there is an S there.
Right. Like, no. It's silent.
Yeah. It's silent.
That's well, great. Just like Pugin.
Yeah. There you go. I was waiting
right.
for it.
You know waiting. It was coming.
All right. So basically, what's your fire department story? What's your firefighter story? You know, tell me, you know, how did you get interested in it? Okay. That'll take us to how you got into the Fools.
Okay, well, it's kind of ironic. I don't remember as a kid wanting to be a firefighter. Yet my cousins, Heather and Holly, they're like, yeah, I used to talk about it and used to want to say that. I don't remember that at all as a kid. So ironically, in high school, I graduate, I get a job at the airlines working for American Airlines, and I start fueling planes. This guy was a real good friend, a mentor of mine. He got me to go to get a job at the airlines, got me a fueler, got me to go to aircraft mechanic school, and I got my A&P license. And so I was an aircraft mechanic for American Airlines. And I think I left there with 13 years when I got called by the Chicago Fire Department. So in that time, as I'm, you know, working at the airlines, my dad, we moved from Chicago to the suburbs, a suburb called Glen Ellen, about 40 minutes, 45 minutes west of Chicago, straight west. And my dad becomes a volunteer fireman. And in a little town, downtown America, downtown USA, Monday night was drill night. The firemen hung out in front of the firehouse. All the kids, high school kids, hung in town at a little ice cream joint or just parked their cars, drove around town and hung out. So we'd always walk over by the firehouse and see my dad, a bunch of my wrestling buddies, and he knew all my friends and knew a bunch of the guys. So when I got old enough, when I became 21, I figured I'm going to be a volunteer fireman with my father. And that was just something to do something with my father. That was it. I thought it'd be something cool to do with my dad. I say it all the time, even when I teach a lot, that my biggest hero and role model and mentor in life is my father. I wouldn't say he's my fire hero or that guy I look up to in the fire service. I look up to him. He's a fireman, but he is my ultimate. That's the guy, you know, he's the bar. And I want to do something with my dad. So I started volunteering and it literally changed my life and my career path.
Yeah. I remember we've done podcasts before on Blog Talk Radio, and just about any time that you're on a podcast, you always say, "This is from my dad." You know, he always said that if he was going to be listening, I wanted to make sure that I let him know, you know, that I do appreciate everything he did, and he's one of your mentors. And so I do remember that was connection with your dad. So so you volunteered at the smaller department before. You were working in the airline industry doing that kind of stuff. And did you, with the fire department, did you just, because you worked for the Chicago Fire Department, did you just, was it like backdraft and you wanted to work at the Fighting 17s and wanted to be with Brian and Timmy or what? I mean, what was it? I mean, it's just like you wanted to be in the city?
No, I started volunteering. And then when I was on the volunteer fire department in Glen Ellen, bunch of guys were full-time firemen elsewhere. Guys that were my age or a little bit ahead of me in years. We all went to the same high school. And those were the guys we kind of looked up to. They were already doing it. They volunteered. They got on full-time departments. They were kind of our mentors at the firehouse. And they worked in a neighboring town called Wheaton. So I would have really liked to got on the Wheaton Fire Department. It was right next door. Two of my closest friends that we all started volunteers together, John Harris and Chris Bradshaw, they both got on Elgin, and I was like, man, they're both on Elgin. How cool is that? So I wanted to go out there even and started testing a little bit and tested in Carroll Stream. And I think I went to get an application. I was a 603rd application for two possible spots. And I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be tougher than I thought. You know, two openings and 600-some people have applications out. Like, all right. Took a test in Deerfield, Illinois, which my wife still reminds me of because my buddy John and I went out the night before my oral interview, and I got annihilated. Needless to say, that oral interview process I don't think went well. And the funny part is I always wanted to go back and like, hey, you passed up on me. I could have offered a lot to your department, but needless to say, they were probably smart they did at the time because on the way there, on the expressway, I had to pull over like three times to get sick. So I'm sure I looked great, even with a dressed up or suit or whatever the hell I was wearing, but I probably didn't have the same face. You know, you know it. You got that look on your face. You can tell. As my wife's just like, you are an idiot. I'm like, ah, yeah. Was it meant to be? So I just start testing. Now, I have a interesting history with Chicago. I had six uncles and an aunt on Chicago. So you know, the test came up, I took it. And literally to get on the Chicago Fire Department, it's a lottery. And what I mean by that is you either pass or fail the test nowadays. And if you pass, you're given a random number. And your number could be one, your number could be 20,000, and you're never going to see the job. It doesn't matter if you scored 100 on the test, the written, or if you scored a 70. You're either passed or you fail, and you're given a ranking number. So it's you're lucky to get it. So I guess what really – can we swear on this? I'll try not to. Yeah, but really ticks. What really pisses me off is people that come on our job and don't appreciate it because it's really hard to get our job. And if you take it for granted, shame on you, and you don't deserve it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you go from, you know, your two spots, 600 people, you're like, shit, my you know, my odds are against me, but you decide you're going to go with 20,000 people for 1,000 spots. And yeah, I guess, you know, maybe that's
got to try it. Yeah. You got to try it.
So is I mean, this is interesting because you and I've known you for a long time. We've never really talked this depth about Chicago Fire Department, and I'm always been a fire buff about all the old urban fire departments, and Chicago being one of them. Of course, you know, I'm a fan of Backdraft like everybody else. And but it, I mean, today does Chicago Fire Department still test that way today, where it's a lottery?
Yeah, what happened when I came on, it was a little different. When I came on, you either were qualified or well qualified. You either scored 89 or better, you were in the well qualified list. Okay. And what they did is they randomly picked a number out of a hat. And I think that number was 6. If your social security number ended in 6, those were the people they called first. Mine ended in 4. So when I took the test in 95, I got on in 2001. So also kind of luck. But there was a big lawsuit with that because someone said, how did you pick 89 as your number? Like, kind of threw that out of the hat. It wasn't like 70 or 85 is because of this, or it was 89. It was like a weird number. So same thing on that, though. It didn't matter if you got 100 or 89. If you were well qualified and your social security number ended in 6 and that's where they started, then they went to 7, 8, 9. So because of that, that's why they do it the way they do now. And it's strictly pass or fail lottery selection. What they do good now, and they never did before, is they get preference points for military. You get a point, or you get, shouldn't say you get a point. Out of every academy class, they do a percentage. So 10% or 15% will be veterans, automatically go to the front. And not, they just go down the list in order. If you're a veteran, yes, you go in, you go in. So they're actually doing that. And if you're one of your members was a line of duty death. So that is new to us within the last 10 years, maybe, that we started doing that. So that's a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. I think that's interesting. I mean, most people probably that are not around the Chicago area or don't work for Chicago Fire Department probably don't realize the challenges. And, you know, and the other thing is that the bigger the department, it's got to be just extremely hard. You know, a place like FDNY and Chicago and LA
County. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's just like these departments are so monstrous. The amount of people that you need and the amount of people that are applying, because everybody wants to work for, you know, wants to be part of Backdraft or whatever it is. Yeah. It's just, it's like, it would just be, you know, a significant monumental task to get through that. So that's interesting. So you kind of answered it a little bit. The other part of the question is, where else would you work if you didn't, if you couldn't get in the Chicago Fire Department? The Chicago Fire Department had a height requirement, and, mm-hmm. You know, you and I we're at that,
we're
that
vertically middle... vertically challenged, right? we're as a good friend of mine, Pat Donnelly, used to say at my job, we're LGTF, Little Guy Task Force, Attics and Basements.
I love it. Yeah. Yep. But you know, I'll just say from like the Seattle Fire Department, just before I was testing, Seattle Fire Department had a height 3 requirement, and I shouldn't say just before. I just remember they were talking a lot about it when I was testing in the 80s, but. But what if Chicago had a height requirement and you didn't make it? And so where else would you want to work, or did you ever give that any thought?
I never gave it thought. Like I never thought of, I want to be a New York fireman or, San Francisco or Boston. I was kind of my own world here volunteering, just thought, man, if I can do this job here, I never was exposed to much of that because in the volunteer world I was in, I still had my full-time job working. Didn't attend a lot of conferences. I did get to attend FDIC as a volunteer and was like, you know, awestruck, I should say, like, what is this? And you'd hear someone speak and you'd see all these stuff. And so that was probably my first exposure, but never had enough. Looking into it now, I think it'd be cool to work in Boston, the way they ladder a building. I think what's cool about New York is the back step guy on an engine. When you look at the back of the hose bed, they got to estimate what hose to stretch and drop and lay out. There's a skill and art. So I think every department has its uniqueness. You know, being in a city, I think yours has it. You have tillers, don't you, by you?
Yeah.
You guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, being able to be on a tiller, I think there's unique, like, so there's uniqueness about a lot of departments that I love. I wish I could go work at them for a couple years and absorb those things and ways. I mean, I'll give you an example. Well, all this COVID-19 stuff's been going on. We've been doing online training for IFSI, either Facebook or Zoom platforms. And the other day on Facebook Live, some of our buddies from Milwaukee did the Milwaukee roof cut. And you could see it on Facebook, and not plugging the Institute by any means, but they're good friends of mine, great guys, and they were talking about how they cut roofs and why. The thing they talked about that I was neat that I never heard of in my life is their roof ladders have hooks on both ends. Doesn't affect how the ladder works at all, but there's a set of hooks on each end. So instead of having to helicopter the ladder at the peak, if you had to go to the other side, just lift it up, slide it over, undo the one hooks, engage the other hooks. And I thought, brilliant. And that's how their ladders come. And that's one of those tidbits that you pick up somewhere that I've never heard until now. And I know these guys and we're friends, and how I missed it. And I thought, why not? If it doesn't affect the ladder's use, why wouldn't you have it come standard so that you have that option? Doesn't matter if you throw it upside down, frontwards, backwards, you got hooks.
Yeah, I did see that on Facebook, and I think that's been at least in the fire service, it's been a trend going for a lot of the ladder companies getting typically it's double butted and double hooked. Mm-hmm. And like all of ours are that way. We have double butt, double hook on all of mm-hmm. our ladders for like that. And we don't do the Milwaukee cut, but it's just mm-hmm. the idea that you can use either end of it. You can slide it over the top and you don't have to helicopter it when you're on the,
right,
when you're walking up the aerial with it and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that is pretty cool. You know, and I think of FDNY and anybody that's with FDNY or Chicago or any mm-hmm. of these departments I mentioned, don't take any offense, but when I think of FDNY, I think of their aggressive stretches and their hose handling, and I think of mm-hmm. like the OV position for the FDNY. When yep. I think of LA City, they're very aggressive on the roof. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, and so when I think of the Chicago Fire Department, other than what stands out in my mind, and everybody is, you know, our age has been blessed with backdraft, but when I think of the Chicago Fire Department, I can see this image very similar to the to Boston, that image of that firefighter, and I think the aggressive nature of the Chicago Fire Department. But I just, what would be the Chicago's thing? I mean, if it's FDNY is like the push and the OV and LA is the what does Chicago stand out for?
I think we're an aggressive interior fire coming that also is a very vertical, aggressive vertical ventilation. We open up roofs and we open them up a lot and right away. Okay. Where I know, like New York, I know, funny story, George Healy from New York came here to teach with us down in Champaign, RIT, and him and another buddy from the suburbs, Jeff Wander, they were riding with us on the squad for the day. And Tom Mazarius, his name is Brawny, he was our officer. And we're all heading to Champaign to teach in the morning. They came in, George flew in from New York the night before Midway. We picked them up, we catch a good fire out south, and it wasn't going good. The main stuck up in the street, and just in the air right out of the bed like this, won't move anymore. And our chief's yelling. It's a big 2.5-story Victorian home, a lot of turret roof and different roof lines, and it's rocking. He's like, I need someone on the roof. So he yells, my own Brawny tells the one guy, Pat Finn and myself, get up to the roof and help these guys. And after talking afterwards with George Healy from New York, he's like, why'd you guys vent that roof? You know, like, that's not how they kind of operate like we do. I'm not saying they don't vent roofs, but I think we're very aggressive at vertical ventilation and doing a push and interior attack. And the other thing I would say is blitz attack. I mean, it's something that's really big here is something that's out there that we want to do an article I do for fire engineering. I have three I want to do now. I have three thoughts on this, and I just got to quit being a sissy and write it because that's it. I'm being a puss. And COVID-19 is the one that really made me think of this other idea. But, I just got to go out there and do it because one of the things is people are confusing what we call quick water and blitz attack. Well, blitz attack is the deck gun. Hit it a lot of, you know, hitting it hard and fast and then making your stretch, doing aggressive interior attack. Quick water for us is stretching the cross leg, getting water in the fire, and getting a positive source of water before you run out of tank water.
Oh.
That's quick water. You know what I mean? And that interchange of quick water and blitz attack is kind of getting confused. So may do that. So I'd say that's what those things were known for. Blitz attack, quick water, because that was the point for single family dwellings, that multi-story, when you're not pulling 2, 3, 4 buildings past for the aerial to be able to stretch it properly because of the trees and power lines. And then a lot of vertical ventilation, and we're an aggressive interior company. We don't do much from the exterior. I mean, we do, but I'd say us. I mean, like you say, I picture Boston as that. You see ladders everywhere in Boston. You know, yeah. L.A., they're on those slate roofs. They're on those roofs. They're cutting with chainsaws. I mean, they were operating chainsaws there long before we had them. So yeah. I guess that's my mind, I guess, of the image.
Yeah, again, you bring up Boston. That's a good example, is that they're very well known for their ladder culture. And I know that there's been discussion on Facebook where people have gotten upset over, you know, why are these guys hitting it from the yard? And like, come on. I mean, there's a point when we can say, we can have the debate over, you know, yard breathers that are just out there, you know, doing what they shouldn't be doing versus a department like Chicago that uses as an effective tactic and is completely different. And, you know, the whole idea, you know, like the quick water thing, it's funny you say that. This is just about the American Fire Service. I know we're still on question one out of I think we had 15 questions.
Right. I see seven, but there's a couple ABs. So if you add that out, yeah.
but you know, when you look at the American Fire Service, the language just across our nation, quick water, what's that mean to some other person? Like my department and the departments in this area use Blue Card as their as their IMS model. And one of the terms is quick hit. And so quick hit is completely different, but it sounds a lot like quick water. And just, it's just amazing that, you know, you have to kind of have a translator, almost like you're traveling when you're going from state to state or city to city over, like, before somebody gets upset over, you know, somebody said something and what it means in your organization or what it means in your region of the country might be completely different. And you kind of got to understand it before you, you know, having a point or decide you're going to criticize them for their actions.
The one I get a lot is, I say pipe, you know, grab the pipe. That's something you hear about is this pipe. And everyone else calls it a nozzle. You know what I mean? And so you'll be teaching class and you're not here. Or even if you're down in Southern Illinois or somewhere out of saying, like, all right, you're going to take the pipe, and they're like, pipe, you know, and you don't realize it. You know what I mean? Just those different things. So, yeah, 100%.
The department that's the oldest department in our county where we work, been around since 1890, something like that. But they call it pipemen, and it's the pipemen. And I don't know if they're still using that term because it's not as politically correct as it once was. But yeah, the term pipe is we're familiar with it over here. All right, so let's go on to question two here. What is your assignment with Chicago Fire Department right now?
My current assignment is I'm a relief lieutenant in the 5th District, which is primarily on the south side of Chicago. Basically, what that means is I don't have a home. I float from house to house or wherever they need me. I am fortunate. Sometimes you get to sit places. I've been real fortunate. I've been sitting at truck 27 for about 5 months, and it's a very busy, great house, engine 62. It's always the engine's house, so it's engine 62, truck 27, and great spot, great house, but my time is short-lived because the spot should be getting filled here June 1st or 16th, and I'll be back floating around. But so I'm a reliever, and I'll probably be doing it for some time because we don't have time in grade. So when you get promoted lieutenant, your seniority is always your seniority. So I made lieutenant with 14 years. Well, these classes come in, and maybe there's two guys I got beat, but then the other 20 guys got me beat, so I'm kind of – I'm always moving up and then moving down, moving up, moving down. So I could get a spot possibly, but I'm not ready to be slow yet. I want a good bunch of guys, good camaraderie, and I want work.
Yeah.
So
do you stay in the 5th Battalion then as a relief, or do you – or I'm sorry, the 5th District?
Yes, pretty you much in the 5th District. But I do occasionally go out of district. I've been detailed to the first to go to either squad – 1 or 5, sometimes the airport's a squad 7 or the hazmat rig, but usually I'm in my district. But we'll see what happens. I mean, if I had a goal or career longevity goal, it'd be go to the squad as a company officer. If I got that, I may never take another personal exam or do anything in my life. That would be my career, and I'd take squad 1, 2, or 5. Different animals at each place. I'd always want to go back home because I'm from squad 5. That'd be my dream spot. I would love to go downtown to Squad 1 because the L-tracks, the subway, the high-rise, the river, they have the other technical rescue spots that the other squads don't get as much. The other ones maybe get a little more fire duty. And then Squad 2 is up on the north side, northwest side, and would love to go there. If not, I'd take a great company, but my other true dream is to go to the Fire Academy, be the director of training someday. Now, don't know if that will happen. because of my rank. I have to make a couple more ranks to probably get there, but we'll see.
I was just going to say, I mean, you'd have to promote up. Would you not have to be the chief of training or director of training, whatever it is?
At least maybe a captain. They prefer you be at least a battalion chief because the director of training spots usually a deputy district or district chief position. Now, they have captains there and had them act out of rank because it's an exempt rank spot. You could take a fireman and make him the commissioner, you know what I mean, because it's an exempt non-bargaining unit position. But that would kind of be a goal. So we'll see what happens with those two.
Yeah. What I mean, I've been to your house a couple times before. So if you did have to go to take a position like that, what would be the drive into the city? I mean, I don't remember how close you are to the city.
Maybe without traffic, 25 minutes. With traffic, hour plus. So, but, you know, like when I was an instructor at the academy, you know, I used to get there at 5:30 in the morning and we'd work out or we'd mess around with the candidates. They'd have questions, get things set up, and then, you know, you shower there, get dressed in uniform and start your day there. And then you either left earlier or you stayed late enough or you missed traffic and helped out. I mean, so days there weren't 8-hour days. I mean, for the guys that really cared and wanted to make their job better, they were probably 12 to 14 hour days by the time all said and done. But there was a love for it. You know, I mean, you're hoping a lot of guys bitch about firemen coming on their job and who trained them, where'd you get your training? And they all bitch, but they ain't doing nothing to make their job better. So to me, I always tell guys that have a lot of comments and criticism, go to the academy and see for yourself. It's like there's politics involved, there's personalities and time restraints. You just can't fit everything in that you want to show these guys. You wish you could. So
yeah. You kind of already answered one of the questions I was going to ask you about the squad. I know that you were on squad 5. We visited squad 5 when we were in Chicago one time, and it was pretty cool. And you want to go back to the squad. You take a promotion to go back to any of the squads, basically. But any great memories? I mean, one of the pictures that I love that I have of you, I don't know how we got it. I think it was one of the ones you sent in for like our, you know, our positions on the mm-hmm. website. And it looks like you and a 6-foot hook and the hook's like 3 feet over your head. It might have been a 10 or a 12-foot hook. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, that was with the squad at the back of a commercial job, I think mm-hmm. is what it was, or the alley or something like that. But good memories of the squad. You really loved it?
Loved it. I loved being on Engine 63 as a fireman because it was Engine 63, Truck 16. I was the cook back then at that house when I was there. And we had such a tight bond. I mean, we did stuff together as a shift regularly. We go to people's houses or parties, and it just, there was like a true love for each other. I mean, I'm talking that bond. It was awesome. Like, you didn't want to be off on your daily day or detailed out of the house to another house that was shorthanded because you're going to miss something fun. I mean, it was just probably one of the best times I ever had in a job was at 63. With that being said, I loved being on squad 5. It was, to me, it was a company you're lucky to get, in my opinion. Yeah, there's politics involved, I'm not going to lie. There's, you know, clout, there's, you name it. Everything comes involved to get there. But you're blessed to go there because you are going to a company that goes to more calls, more fires, more scenarios, or the opportunity to do more sets and reps than anyone else. So how can you not get better at your craft? I mean, I'm selfish saying I didn't want to leave there. I mean, I almost didn't take the lieutenant promotion. I wouldn't say, I don't know. I have to ask Jill. She's sitting in the background. I think we had some long discussions about it. I mean, I really was thinking about not taking the promotion. And I'm not going to lie to you. There are days when I hear them going to 3 fires and I'm sitting at a house that's a busy house and it just has to be a day where we're not doing anything. I'm going, man, they had 3 fires in a dive job. And I'm like, I should have stayed there. I should have stayed there. I still feel that way. Some of my closest friends that are lieutenants, captains, and moving up, they said the same thing until they got back to being the officer of a squad. You know, it's something about it. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's an attitude. It's a little bravado. It's just cool. People say this is cliche. I'm sure if guys hear this from my job, they're like, oh, F off. That's bullshit, whatever. But you're the company that's supposed to have the answers. You know, like the joke phrase is the citizens of Chicago need help. They call the fire department. The fire department needs help. That's what the squad's for. And whether that's true or not or a funny jag, I think we believed it. And He loved it. And I probably never felt safer in my life. I think my wife would say the same. She's shaking her head yes in the background that the guys there, man, you go there and you think you know a thing or two. Here, I was a volunteer fireman. All right, I got this fire stuff kind of figured out. I go to the Chicago Academy. You get beat down. You won't ever tell anyone you're a fireman there. And I didn't. I shut up because you saw the one guy that did. You were a fireman. That's how you stupid. Like they don't care. You got to learn their way. Well, when you go to the squad, it was the same thing. Like, sit down, shut up. You have two rigs of things to learn, and you get humbled again really quickly. But then on the flip side, you learn a different part of the job. You get to go to fires at different points in times. You have a opinion on companies that are, hey, that's a good company. You get to the fire, and you're like, they ain't so good. You know, they're living on reputations of others. So you get to see a lot, and you're that – a squad in Chicago, you're a utility company. Whatever, whenever, what needs to be done. And
how many squads are in Chicago?
There's technically four. The squad seven's at the airport. They actually do have a snorkel now. They run with a box rig and snorkel. They used to not back in the day. Now they do. So all four squads are the same. And so there's four sets. A box rig followed by a chase vehicle, which is the snorkel itself.
Well, there's two things there. One, I don't know of another department that uses snorkels still. I had one as a Tonka truck when I was a kid wanting to be a fireman.
They're awesome.
We could do a whole nother talk on snorkels.
Tactically, they're awesome because, now granted, if it's going above three or four stories, right, you're losing the height because they're 55-footers. But anything under that, when you have heavy fire on those upper floors or any floor, to be able to get the basket down low, right, and here's my target point I want to hit, get the basket down low, and now my stream, my deck gun can go upward. Just like you hit it from outside with a blitz attack with a deck gun or a 2.5, I'm hitting the ceiling. Water's running across the ceiling. I'm cooling the ceiling temperatures, stop and roll over, preventing a flashover, and you get the same thing. And, man, it can strip so much stuff, and it can just get in spots because it's single axle, tight area. It can fit in, and just the way it maneuvers. So yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So basically the squad got to go to all the fires. So if you were one of the four, you pretty much, Chicago's having a fire every day likely. And, so the squads are working every day. Yeah. I could see where that would be, you know, quite the desire. And plus the fact of, you know, Josh Materia, good buddy of mine that works on Rescue One here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. He and I were talking one day before he went to the rescue, and I couldn't believe he was going to the rescue because he had a pretty decent assignment on a ladder truck and he was seeing a decent amount of work. And the one thing that he told me was, you know, when you go to the rescue, you're training every single day, hours and hours of training because the multitude of things that you have to do. And for a person that was hungry for training, learning, being mm-hmm. good at the job, you know, going to a specialty like that it's the equivalent of going to SWAT for a cop, you know, and that it goes up, you know, the bar gets raised and you have to meet it and you got a lot of work to do that. So that makes a lot of sense.
It's funny you say that because I hope to go back there. As I said, they've gotten more equipment and more things than they ever had than I was there. And I really feel like I'm behind the eight ball, you know, I'm out of the box looking in because they've got more stuff. The rope systems have changed since I was there. So now when I interview for the officer spot, I'm like, I'm worried. Like I got to really be on my game and educate because it's changing all the time. And I'm the new guy again. And I'm the weakest link.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wish you the best, man. I'd love to see you get back to the squad and be able to continue doing that. And, you know, and one of my questions is where are you going to live your days out? I got an idea where you're going to live your days out. If you can get back to the squad, you're probably not going to put in for that fire marshal spot, are you? I just remember the one day we came in and I want to say it was must have been truck 72.
Engine 72, Tower 34 when I was still in the bureau. Yeah.
And the fire marshal's office was there in the firehouse. So I'm like, that's kind of cool. All right, so moving on. How did you get involved with the Fools? Let's get to the brass tacks. Sure. We've spent 30 minutes talking about life. Let's get to the Fools. How did you get into the Fools? What was the draw?
I got involved in the Fools from a bunch of guys out this way. They were at the basement of the Hampton when it was insane, right? When it all really started. And they came back and said, man, we got to start one of these chapters. I think our chapter maybe started in 2002. I came on in I think 2002 is when I became a member of the Fools organization. And they may have been trying to organize it in 01, but really didn't get things going until 02. Like, I think I made the second meeting our chapter ever had. And they were in the basement, came back, said, we got to start this. A guy by the name of Seth Dale, Lou Lake, Tom Trevino, John Hojack. I'm missing a name or two here. Mike Arrico, I think I met him. They were the founders of our chapter that started it. And a buddy of mine, Lou Lake, and he said, hey, you ought to come check this out. And came to a meeting, and ever since then, it has utterly changed my life and been involved ever since then.
All right, shameless plug, your chapter.
What's that?
What is your chapter?
What is it?
What do you mean? What's the name of your chapter?
Our chapter? Oh, I'm sorry. Southside Fools.
I mean, I could have answered it for you, but I wanted you to be able to say
who you were with. Southside Fools, still am, and just a member, and love it. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's Fools has changed my life. I mean, I could say not only for the international aspect, but if I talk our local chapter, there were some huge members in our chapter. One's on my arm still, who's recently passed, Mac McCaslin. That's his Mac Bulldog. Lou Lake was going to be Bob Hoff. I mean, there's so many guys. I'll just stop it. Bob McKee was a great guy. Eddie Enright. So there was some great guys, and they helped me not only be a fireman, but to be a better fireman, a better leader, father, and hopefully husband, because I'm listening to these guys and I'm making the mistakes they make, and they're telling me, hey, I did that. This is what you want to do. And I'll be honest, whether it comes to, you know, after a day of work, you want to go to the bar, and he says, hey, I used to go to the bar every day after the side job. Probably should have went home a little more often. I mean, even stuff as simple as that. We even made our own leadership. We called them the senior guys, right? And they sat at one table, and everyone knew that when you had a problem at work, you could go for them. And I remember more than once I brought up a problem that either happened at fire or something at home. And I mean home is, that's the one article I've always said I want to write and I haven't, is the struggle between personal and professional life. And I used to talk to these guys about it. And every one of them now tells me family first, family first, family first. But every one of them to get where they are or where they were didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it's easy for them to say it now. And so I like to think, my wife and me disagree with the husband part, but the Fools have done nothing but make me a better person all around. And that's why I have such love for this organization, locally and internationally.
Yeah, I think, 2002 was a good year because that's when I joined the Fools and when our chapter, Puget, did I even say it right? Because you...
you tell me if you said it right. I know how I say it.
The Puget Sound.
It's great. You got to think about it after all my years of badgering you. Oh my God.
But the Puget Sound Fools. They started in 2002. And when we were just the other day, we were doing something with, just wanting to acknowledge all those chapters that have been around for a long time. Because we had our, 20,000th member join, and I think it's 20,000 or 25,000, I don't remember exactly, but so we wanted to acknowledge all those chapters that have been around for a long time. And I remember looking at the list and seeing you guys, and 2002 was a big year for a lot of chapters starting, and it was a good stepping off point for us.
Think about those chapters you were mentioning. How many of them are still here? We lost some of those staple chapters, and now new ones are coming out. I mean, it's amazing, but yeah, there are a lot of chapters. And you're like, man, these guys, dude, I want to be like that chapter. And shit, they're not here anymore. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Man, it's scary.
Yeah. And there was, I mean, we could talk about all the down dirty stuff. I mean, I think that a lot of chapters were created on the coattails of 9/11 and, and it just, they weren't in it for the right reasons. And they didn't last very long because it was just all about the notoriety but those that have hung out and have been here the long haul has been great. I mean, everybody has their ups and downs as a chapter. On my chapter was very aggressive and busy early on in the mid 2000s. And now we don't have as much of attendance that we used to and the group, but it's wax and wanes, it goes up and down, and And that is, you know, that's the commitment to the long haul and staying true to the message. So, 2008, that's the first time I met you. It was when we, the Puget Sound Fools hosted the 2008, convention. And that was the beginning of the e-board. You came on as an e-board member. What was your position?
I didn't come on it. I not in 2008. Here's a funny story. They asked me if I'd put in. Gilbert approached me and asked if I'd be president. And I talked to Hank and said, hey, we should do this. You'd be vice president. You want to run? I was going to run for president. You should run for vice president. We had a plan. And I kind of screwed him over on this, in a sense, because my wife was much smarter than I am. And I'll never say that for the record ever again. And she's sitting here. So it's the only time you'll hear this, Jill. The lieutenant's exam was coming up. And I tend to say yes to everything. I probably help others more than I should stay home and do some stuff. It's just, I don't know how I am. And she said, you have the exam, do not do it. And she was the one, Jill was the one that talked me to not going on the e-board. So I didn't. That's when DePoto, Hankins, and all those guys came in 08. So we're in the front row at your convention as they're changing the guard. Gilbert's sitting next to Jill and I. My wife is crying, saying, I didn't know what this meant. I don't understand. You should be up there. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, you're saying this now. She was 100% right. I'm glad I didn't, because I did well on it. I didn't ace the lieutenants, but I did well enough I got made, right? So I did good. And maybe I wouldn't have done that, and who knows what would have happened. I'd still be on the squad, so maybe been okay. But point is, she was right. And I think a year after that, maybe 09, if not 2010, somewhere in there is when I came on the e-board and started helping doing the secretary stuff. Because back then, Ellen was the secretary, the treasurer, and membership.
Yep. That's right.
Everything. And so I came on, I think, I don't remember it was 09 and 10. In fact, I called Ellen today because, you know, she'd probably remember, and she didn't answer. She called me back later, and I missed it. But so somewhere around 2009 or 10, I came on as e-board doing the secretary, treasurer stuff, and she just did membership.
Nice. I thought for sure that you were up there on that when the founders announced the e-board. That was 2008 when they basically created the e-board and needed somebody else to kind of take care of the business side of things. And I swear you were there, but I know you were there. But I mean, I swear were up there on that. Who was the e-board then? It was DePoto was president. You talked Hankins into joining.
Yeah. DePoto, Hankins, Ellen. I don't even know who else was still on.
Sippy did
the web stuff, so it wasn't really an e-board position.
What was the guy? Alan Shepard or not Alan Shepard?
Ben Shepard.
Ben Shepard, that's right.
We almost should have wrote this down. I should have someone cover for even forget now. But yeah.
Maybe that should be your project that you do as the outgoing president, kind of. If you want emeritus status, you gotta have to do some shit for us. Write the book.
Right.
So when did you go president? How did that all come about?
The founders wanted to change. There was a lot of, I don't know if it was drama or what. I kind of stayed out of all of it, but something happened with the president that was in. I got along with him. I don't know what happened, but they didn't want him to be president anymore. Then I was approached. They'd asked me if I'd fill in and to complete his term, and then I ran and stayed running since then. I like the guy. He's a good guy. We don't talk much anymore. I'm going to say names out of respect. But they just unfortunately changed it. And ironically, it affected my relationship with Hankins a bit too. Good thing is we've gotten back, and it took Bart saying, hey, I had nothing to do with it. It was us. You know, it was the international. It was the founders. That was us. And I think they kind of thought maybe I backdoored or how I came in. And luckily, knock on wood, I think I'll say this is true of the international RE board when I was there with you guys and you guys now. We've always been at least honest and transparent and open. And I think that worked out because of that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a... It's like conspiracy theories. I know that all that was going on. I thought when they were going to make the change, I thought Hankins was going to come in and step in to be the president, and I thought Hankins would do a great job. And I knew
for sure he's a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, so you take over as president, and some things were changing. Basically, the e-board almost turns over multiple positions as once you become president. I don't know if you came in there and started burying bodies like Chicago guys do or what.
No, just things came along. But Dana Potter came on, and then his life changed drastically, and he had a bail out, you know. And then we had Ben Shepherd. He didn't work out, and something came in his personal life, I should say, didn't work out. We had to go out, you know, and then things changed along. And we had the current e-board we had just not long ago that I was on, and we had a good bunch of guys. And I think the transition from there to where now is awesome. You know, Dick Scheitz from our job passed away. Well-known legend is a legend for Our Lady of Angels Fire, the iconic pitcher, the fireman carrying the kid out. And his statement was, leave the job a little better for the next guy. So hopefully I left the fools better for you guys. And I know it's better because of you guys being there than when I was there. And that's the whole goal. And hopefully you guys will do the same thing to turn over.
Yeah. So I would agree. I think my time with you on the e-board has been awesome. And I enjoyed it. You know, we didn't always, as an e-board, agree on everything, as you all know.
Right.
And so some of our meetings, you know, we're just like scratching our heads going, you know, and then all of a sudden you just had to make, you made your decision and we're going to move forward with it. And everybody has to get behind it. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like a small fire department all on its own where, okay, well, here's a decision been made. We're going to move forward with this. And otherwise we'd sit here and we'd kibitz about it and keep on bullshitting about it and never get anywhere. So. So what was your greatest accomplishment or something that you're really proud of in your time as a president?
So that was the question that I struggle with. And for me to not have an answer and struggle to not be able to talk, you'll kind of find as odd. It's like you and I, we've never told a short story in our life. So, that was the one question. I don't know. I can't say I've had a great accomplishment. I can say we as an organization, I mean, I think you know me, I was always really big on us, we, and them. I don't know anything that I did. I know we as a whole really took the fools and made it a respectable, or changed the image. How about we've changed the mission statement. We changed the image. We do more training. We're out there more. We're transparent. So I'm proud of those things as a fools organization. And I can't say nothing that it is that I did. It's what we did.
Yeah, I would agree. Because I was thinking as I put that question out there, I'm like, yeah, this is why I wanted you to have questions ahead of time, so you had an opportunity to kind of think about it. But you know, when you look back on it, there was a lot of the business side of things that that we spent in your terms as president. You know, working on updating the articles, making them more professional. Trying to the image of the fools. I mean, again, we could turn this into a full mm-hmm. conversation, but. And the fools have had that image for a long time of being the drunk, the drunk drinking mm-hmm. boys club. And there are people that do that and they're not even a part of the fools that do it too.
Right.
So, but trying to clean up the image of the fools, I think was something that, majority of the people would agree that that's exactly what was mm-hmm. being done. Others of course might say, well, no, we didn't do really anything with it, But yeah, that is a tough question, and I do appreciate all the effort that you put in, and trying to make it a better place, leaving it better.
Yeah.
Any unfinished business that you would have?
Maybe. One, I really like to see the regional rep thing go. I know it's something we were talking about when I was still there, and it's something you guys are working on now. I think having regional reps for the Fools organization will be a really good thing. The other thing was I always wanted to have a international sponsored training event. I know I talked about even doing it at IFSI, and it would be training. I mean, the hard part there would be getting there to, the travel there isn't the easiest, and there's nothing great around to do. It's a college town and a college ain't in session. But if we wanted to go to a facility to do hands-on skills, I mean, I think it'd be awesome, and it would be us. It'd be our training event, and it'd be hosted by the international. So if I had to say, those are probably two things. The other thing I would say just with this COVID-19 is, man, how we missed the boat on Zoom, like that type of platform. You know, we'd send out that quarterly newsletter. Man, the way we can, if you buy the better package, you could have 400, 500 people on a Zoom meeting. I think it's 450 is the max, depending on what plan you buy. But now we could actually see and talk to people way easier and more than we ever did before. And it doesn't just have to be chapter president. We could do chapters. We could do chapters instead of that president that's lacking, maybe a poor leader. Well, it goes to a chapter. Now we have chapter meetings from the international side. That way we talk to those members and they're hearing what's going on, because sometimes there's miscommunication. Everything isn't always traveling between the president or the vice president down to the member.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for those members that are listening, we are actually, our next e-board meeting next week is going to be done over Zoom. We're going to give it a shot. You know, we've been using Skype, and you and I are recording this on Skype now. It's good for one or two people, maybe three people, but outside of that, it really can be cumbersome and it's very difficult to use. But we are looking into Zoom and using that more. And I think that if we did have regional reps, you know, having a Zoom account, international Zoom account, that we could have regular meetings, and it always comes down to communication. And there's, you know, a couple things that we've dealt with in the last couple of weeks as an e-board, and just you scratch your head and you're going, how do you guys not know this is happening?
Right.
You know, we communicate in so many different, I mean, the only thing that we could do that would change communication is if we came to your house and told you in person, you know, that this is what's going on.
It may not help, right?
You're still gonna listen.
The question about the insurance card, I guarantee it. Hey, I got this card. I got like, we've been saying this for 12 years.
Oh man, that's true. That is true. All right. Well, we're getting about 50 minutes, so we'll just kind of start wrapping things up here. What are you doing in your spare time now?
Really, it seems like I have no spare time. Just kind of working more with IFSI on the side, because I'm a regional representative for the Institute, so that means I go around to the six counties around here and set up classes free through grant funding, something that's pretty awesome here in Illinois, and I don't know how other states aren't doing it, and it's a shame they're not. We get grant money to provide training to local fire departments, and the training's free. Most of it's hands-on or classroom class. It's not like we're giving confined space ops or, you know, structural collapse technician. It's not those types. Just down and dirty hands-on classes, forced plunger, ladders, fire behavior and smoke, basic company officer. And it could just be classroom, could be some hands-on. And so kind of there's eight reps for the whole state of Illinois, and I'm one of them. So really no busier. You think I got rid of fools, I had all this time, but no, not so much. Not even an ounce. I mean, the COVID-19 is actually a little nice break from IFSI that has been needed. So, but no spare time.
You know what I'm hearing here is I think I'm talking to the next Fools International Education Training Trustee.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. You never know. No.
You never know. You never know. Yeah. Let's see. Are you going to be going to convention this year?
Hoping to. With everything going on, daughter starting college, it depends when certain weekends are for her. Like if that was when she had a like homecoming or something event, then maybe not, but definitely on their plans to do so.
Yeah. What was the best convention you ever attended?
Wow.
I know I didn't prep you for that one.
No, because there were different things that happened at conventions that I think make them great and unique. Like everyone talks about the convention we had in Chicago. I couldn't tell you it. I mean, we were so, you know this because you had your convention and yours was a great convention too. Seattle was a great time. You are so busy and entrenched with everything going on. You don't see it. You're behind the scenes busy that you have blinders on and you don't see it. And they're like, this was great. Things that I thought were great were, man, I liked Alaska just because I'll probably have never had a chance to go there. And I thought that really showed me, and I hope it showed other chapters, that they didn't have go-karts, right? So we did the canoe races. And I think the coolest, most awesome thing about the Fools chapter and Fools organization, everyone's worried about hosting a convention. Oh, we can't do a convention. You can. You don't have to have go-karts. It's your vibe, your town. I've said it 100 times. I mean, if it's tailgates dropped in the field with a bonfire and music playing and roasting a pig, because that's what you would do in Texas, and I'm just throwing name. I'm making up a state. That's what we do. How cool is that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So best one, I don't know. I think St. Louis had a really good convention.
Arkansas, your favorite. Arkansas. Yeah, Jill's saying Arkansas because my whole family would be. Yes. Because my daughter almost, you know, set the fire alarm off in the hotel while
in
Jill
the hotel. And
people, right. Yeah. So the Bontown Fools are next door. Big, oh man, Bigham and Jeff Frost, they come knocking on the door to help. And daughters are looking up at these two monsters like, oh, God.
Yeah, I do remember that one.
Yeah, Arkansas was great for me, though, because I did the hands-on training for the first time ever as the president. And it really made an impact, I think, on people to see the e-board actually doing training. And I just went because I didn't fly for once. I could drove with my family, so I could bring my gear and all my stuff and not pay that extra fee in the air bottle. And I became real good friends with Steve Votaw at that one. And I liked that convention just because it showed me how important it was as an e-board we'd be involved, more out and open, out in front involved. And I think we knew it, but I actually physically did it as well this time. Like you taught at for Cody. At the one convention, you know, yeah. I think I'll put you in Seattle. So, Seattle was fun though, too. I mean,
your wife was there,
yeah, because my wife was there. no, I mean, they were kind of neat. I mean, there's some I didn't like as much, but I think the ones I didn't like as much, some unique things happened on the internationals level or with other chapters and members of our organization helping and making it be a huge success. And those are probably some of the better ones because it could have flopped. And the dedication and drive of the e-board and other members. Like, I mean, Aaron Heller used his company for insurance for a training event for a chapter somewhere. And I'm not going to say names or who. I mean, come on, look at that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's the one. That's definitely the one thing about the Fools, just the networking, connection to people, like-minded people that want to, you know, want to remember traditions, you know, don't want to just go back to horses and such, but they want to remember the traditions, honor them. And, they're really good firefighters across the nation and they want to, you know, better themselves. And, like Aaron and, you know, those types of things, that's what you get. Every convention is different. Every convention, there's something that you get out of it.
Right.
You know, that, it's something that ends up happening or a network or an experience or a connection, whatever it may be. And it's always a blast. I mean, we, as you well know, we try to get it out to everybody and you know, try to attend convention, try to host it, you know, and like the go-karts thing. It's funny is like when Alaska was going to offer and they're like, well, we don't have go-karts in Alaska. We were thinking about doing racing of what they call snow machines, which are, which are
snowmobiles
for the rest of us in the lower states. They wanted to race snow machines on grass, you know, that are going to do like 80 miles an hour. And it was no, that doesn't sound like a good idea. No. So we stuck with a canoe and the river that was
the river.
40 degrees, you know, which was great. You know, there was a lot of fun, Well, we'll close this up. Richie, man, I appreciate the time with you today and I appreciate your time as president. And, I know you're not going to, you know, just disappear. You can always be around. And, I know I can speak for all the members that are still back here on the e-board. You came on the other night, we were doing Zoom. Sippy had put together a Zoom thing and we had been planning, trying to get you this helmet. We were going to try to go and see you. We were working with Jill. I don't know how much you know, but we were working with Jill to try to get to Chicago in January or February and all the timing. And then that wasn't going to work out. And then we were like, well, we'll do it at FDIC. Can we get Richie to FDIC? And then, you know, that all went to shit. But we really do appreciate everything you did. And as I know, I can speak for everybody on the e-board, and I feel pretty confident I can speak for many of the members of Fools International, that you contributed a lot to the Fools, and we do appreciate your service and everything you did. So thank you.
Thanks, buddy. It's been my honor to be here with you today. And you ever want to do a podcast in the future, you have something else or a topic, anytime.
Yeah, we need to do the one on the snorkel thing, because like I said, the only time that I've ever done a snorkel was my Tonka truck when I wanted to be a fireman. I think I don't remember them making it a Chicago style, but it would be interesting to talk about snorkel tactics, and since nobody really has those.
And the helmets relocated, a different helmet down on my bar of the corner. I think I sent the picture out to all you guys. So it's awesome. It's phenomenal, that helmet. I wish the plans would have worked out, because I still need to have a closeout whiskey with all you boys somewhere, or a beverage, and we'll get together soon enough and get that. So I wish it would have worked out that we all could have got together away from the conference, away from the convention. You know what I mean? Just us, like a family setting. So I wish you guys could have come to town, and or I wish we could have made it work. Yeah, we'll get there. So
yeah, hopefully we can do it at a convention. That would be great.
Yep. That's awesome. Right. Well, thank you for your time, Rob. I appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate it. Give Jill and the girls my love, and we'll talk soon.
Tell Jody, hey.
Will do. All right.
All right. Later. See you.